So you're not going to be able to hear me?
I'll be able to hear you, but just if we're talking and you interject, we probably will not be able to hear that.
So that's pretty much like podcasting for the last 6 years with you.
All right.
I'm ready to be ignored.
The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight is Shane Settner.
Yo!
And Brian Hartman.
That's me.
Tonight, we are here to discuss our latest trio of movies. Over the last month, we watched MacGruber, The Founder, and Heathers. But
I'm just still confused. Are you our host? You forgot to say. And people get
confused. I said I'm John Kissel.
You said John Kissel. I'm John Kissel.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't say host. You just said I'm John.
Do Kissel. I ever say host, though?
I think like every time.
I don't know that I do. I don't know that. I'm reluctant to take that claim, even though I was a petty dictator for about 6 months or so.
That's your inner Catholic.
Yeah, I mean, some level of restraint is appropriate.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask one of our fans out there to go back and listen to every episode and see what happens with that. Keep us tally.
We should have that about Thursday, I would imagine. Yeah. Our corrections department is on it. They're a very serious group of volunteers that we appreciate what they do. Our first movie is Yorma Taccone's MacGruber from 2010. This is a SNL movie adaptation of the famous, I guess you would say, skit. I don't know. I quit watching SNL years before this movie came out.
Yeah, skit's right, character.
Skit, 100%. But as far as like how famous it was or wasn't, like probably all of us stopped watching SNL if we ever picked it up after high school or college, the latest. I think that's kind of just how it goes.
I don't know. Was this skit one of them that people are like, hell yeah, you gotta watch this MacGruber? Or is it, well, it might have been before, I guess, YouTube.
I don't know if anyone is ever like super excited about an SNL skit adapted into a movie. Like the Will Ferrell days, that was like peak SNL for me just because I happened to be 16 or 17 in that period of time. So like Night of the Roxbury, that made sense to teenage John. Like, yeah, of course, make a movie out of those guys.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, because
I watched... I remember being excited about It's Pat.
Yikes.
Yeah, I was 12.
I think because MacGruber takes as its basis MacGyver, which the 16, 17-year-olds in the late 2000s would have no sense of, that maybe this particular skit was just out of their wheelhouse. Maybe they weren't going to get it because MacGruber was a critical okay movie. When it came out, I want to say 40s, 50s, Rotten Tomatoes, not great, divisive. Commercially, straight up flop. It went terribly wrong for MacGruber. I think it made half of its budget, and it was released as like a big May movie, like a summer release. That seems like it's a mistake to me. I think that implies a level of expectations.
Yeah, I feel like you gotta sneak this in somewhere. And then
yeah, like mid-August, I think would be appropriate. Yeah. Maybe coinciding with a new season of SNL. It's a shame that it flopped because I think this is like a Naked Gun level spoof comedy. I think this is hilarious. I think when you take the your premise as like de-puffing 80s action movies from the stance of a creature of the 80s like MacGyver. Yeah, how do you fuck that up? And they didn't. In my opinion, they did not fuck this up at all. Brian, what'd you think of MacGruber?
I was pleasantly surprised because I really did not like that skit when it was on Saturday Night Live. Chelsea and I, before we had kids, would watch Saturday Night Live sometimes. So I guess I stuck with it longer than everyone else. I just remember despising MacGruber. And then, like, now I'll watch a clip or two on YouTube, but I'm not going to sit down and watch the whole show. Anyway, I had very low expectations, and I found myself actually laughing out loud a few times. So I was pleasantly surprised. I think I went with a B minus.
Shane, what did you think of MacGruber?
I had high expectations because you had told me it was good and that you enjoyed it. So I thought, I'm like, okay, it's probably gonna be sneaky good, and 100% it was. I mean, I don't think you're wrong to compare it to Naked Gun level, you know. But obviously, critics disagree. But
I think it's got a good reputation. I think. Like, this isn't explicitly a Lonely Island production. It's just, well, of the three, Andy Samberg is the only one who to the best of my knowledge, didn't have anything to do with it. Yorma Taccone directed it, and Akiva Schaffer is a producer. So 2 out of 3, you can pretty obviously see like the impact, the flavor is there. I feel like the MacGruber's willingness to get fucked as a penance is like a direct reference, I think, to Tour de Pharmacy and his and Will Forte's role in that with the baton and the drugs and all of that fun and all of that delightful stuff. But their movies in general do very badly. Hot Rod was a failure. Popstar somehow was a failure. And this is like another of those. Even if it's not necessarily written by those three guys, it gets lumped in with those two movies. And I think critics love Popstar. So I think in retrospect, Lonely Island movies, MacGruber, Hot Rod, have experienced some level of like reevaluation. I do think this is something of like a cult hit, if not like a beloved, overlooked gem from the early 2010s.
Yeah, I mean, I have this at a B plus because this is as well as this movie's gonna get, as good as this movie's gonna get right here.
I watched it 3 times since I wrote my review a few weeks ago. 3 times? 2 times. I watched it 2 times since then. It's available on HBO. The extended version is on HBO. I haven't watched the extended version yet, just because the original version is just too good. This is a really good comedy. And of course, comedies are hard to talk about without getting into a Chris Farley-type segment. I loved it when they did this. That was awesome. And we're going to indulge that impulse for a moment right now as I run down just a handful of pitch perfect jokes that the movie includes.
Do we have
pitch perfect running gags?
I'm gonna like do my kind of fake laugh with it. So
hey, do what you gotta do.
Okay.
Val Kilmer saying "weak" at the very end. Just a little mustard that he puts on that. Comedic genius, Val Kilmer. Who would have thought?
Just his whole presence is the joke, and it works.
Yes. He has a reputation for being difficult. Maybe it's just that he's difficult on like drama or action movies. Maybe he was a comedic actor the whole time. Maybe he just hadn't found his milieu. And he was supposed to be an actor who triumphantly reveals that his dick was blown off in an explosion his whole life. That was Val Kilmer's specific niche. And I'm glad that he found it at this point in his life. The extended backstory of MacGruber and Casey's romance delivered in a delightful Will Forte monologue.
It's
goes further into just like turning this whole idea on its head of like the vengeful action hero who took a breather in Ecuador because you know the former boyfriend of his wife, you know, was talked into having an abortion by his best friend who cheated on her with him. And then, of course, he blew her up and her blood was sprayed all over Kristen Wiig's face. That old hoary chestnut.
So, I guess you want to keep going on your list.
But... I do.
Okay, keep going on your list.
No, I mean, feel free to weigh in.
I was just saying that Kristen Wiig is the... I think she's the movie MVP for me.
Really?
I mean, I love Forte, but she's just so fucking good at everything she does. Like when he walks in, she's like, "I'm into music now," and does whatever. It's so fucking great. Like she just wins every scene she's in.
Yeah, that's hard to argue with. I don't think I will. Well, I mean,
and she's the best part of the skit too. Every single time.
I've seen a handful of the skits on the internet. I get why people wouldn't necessarily like them. They are extremely repetitive. But I think the movie, to take nothing away from Kristen Wiig, who certainly has her talents, but I think the movie coasts on Will Forte's rubber face. Just every time he like screams up into the rain or boils in rage as his mullet gets trimmed. I could just, this goes back to like Tim and Eric Love, where he is a demonic shoe salesman or a mattress salesman or whatever he is. I just that guy's serious. Face, just that guy's face.
No works. Bones.
another tiny moment where a ringing phone undercuts one of MacGruber's badass entry lines. It's just barely there. It's when he's barging into the Pentagon. He walks into the wrong room first, and the janitor says, "What?" And then he walks into another room, and he's the right one, and he like rattles off some kind of Schwarzenegger-esque one-liner. things are going to change now. And then a phone rings right as soon as he stops saying it. It's like it's turned down in the sound mix, but it's. I mean, if your movie includes those kind of gags, those like tiny throwaway gags, you're doing something right. And MacGruber is doing many things right. Does anybody else want to play the Chris Farley game and just single out anything they loved in MacGruber?
I'll add in when he's in Ecuador and like he's the, you know, the white savior volunteer
sure.
and the kids just steal from him.
They'll be back.
The main big joke that I thought they could have waited, I don't know, five more minutes on when they spend all that time gathering all his former coworkers and then they're just gone in an instant.
Which brings me to my last entry into the Chris Farley game, wherein MacGruber contains a perfect gay joke. The laugh, it comes from the homophobe's discomfort at this giant man who I think is a professional wrestler. I want to say it's the Big Show. He's like kissing his lover, his male lover. And of course, MacGruber's homophobia ultimately saves the guy's life. Everything's happy. He gets to catch the bouquet at the wedding. Great, we did it. That's a perfect gay joke.
It's pretty fucking good.
Yeah, and there's so much homoeroticism like coursing through all those Schwarzenegger Stallone movies. Right, like when are Carl Weathers in
this movie? But like, no, he directly asked men to fuck him too.
Like when is Schwarzenegger and Carl Weathers just gonna lay down in a jungle bed of banana leaves and just go to fucking town?
Not
like
soon
a
enough.
Movie like Predator that contains this like this like gaping shot of their. I see your face. I see your face at my choice of words. contains this lovingly moistened shot, like someone came in with the spritz bottle and moistened down their or oiled up or whatever their biceps as they come in for a flexing handshake. Like fuck you, just fuck already. Just kiss each other. Everybody knows you want to do it. This is the most transparent thing in the world. It's not an accident. I think that Always Sunny includes that as like Mac's favorite movie, Deep in the Closet, Mac.
Yeah. I just think of Predators and the guy tells that joke, the guy with the big glasses, and
sure,
always
sure,
made
sure.
me deeply uncomfortable. The thing is, like the punchline is, "Pussy was as big as a house" or something. Like, I don't know. It just says, when I saw it as a kid, and it's still it like so much so it bothers me now. And I was so happy when that character died.
I've seen the last like 45 minutes of that movie probably a dozen times. I think I've seen the first 45 once or twice. You just always, it's one of those movies that if you still have cable, you're just like flipping through and you see it like, great, Predator. I'll watch Arnold Schwarzenegger drop a wooden log on this guy. But never the beginning, here nor there. I already praised Forte. He's extremely in his element here. He's borrowing this type of character from Will Ferrell comedies. This like person who thinks he's an authority on something when he is actually a person who sucks, as I said in my review, and then just like cranking it up several levels, and I just love his face. I love Will Forte's face. as far as the spoof genre in general, your aforementioned Naked Guns, your pop stars, others that are you know not coming to mind necessarily.
I mean,
right
I
now.
Guess like what was your Mount Rushmore is always like your Naked Guns, the Western.
Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
I mean, do people consider Robin Hood Prince of Thieves in there? I mean,
maybe Men in Tights.
That's what I meant to say. Yeah.
Prince of Thieves is essentially.
Yeah.
Men in Tights. Yeah, it's so, something of a parody of those kind of movies.
So I mean, does this rank up there with those?
I very much think
Spinal
so.
Spinal Tap, obviously.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Airplane, fuck. So I mean, there's your classic top five. They're the guys pushed Men in Tights out, but
I've never seen Men in Tights.
Oh, it's delightful.
Yeah, I believe you. Is it just explicitly about Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, or is it broader than that?
It's a little broader than that.
Okay, I trust you. Spaceballs, not in that group. I don't think Spaceballs holds up.
I mean, it may not hold up. I just don't know if people put it in that top five. I guess.
I think they probably haven't seen it since they were 16 years old, but they did. Blazing Saddles holds up. I saw it in theaters not too long ago, well, a year or two ago. Yeah, that's totally fine. I think like the key is that the movie works as an entry into its own genre while also being a spoof. Like that opening action sequence in MacGruber is like indistinguishable from anything Michael Bay or Jerry Bruckheimer did in the 90s. That just essentially like those kind of movies. And it's played straight until MacGruber is playing a saxophone in a warehouse over the opening credits. Anything else to say about MacGruber before we move on?
Shockingly recommend it.
All right. It's high praise coming from Ryan. Our next movie, The Founder, from the end of 2016, stars Michael Keaton as Ray Kroc, the founder of the corporation McDonald's, if not the idea of McDonald's itself. This is from the director of The Blind Side and The Alamo, John Lee Hancock, and the writer of The Wrestler. I think the director of The Blind Side had a greater impact on this movie than the writer of The Wrestler. It's just not very good, in my opinion. It's just standard biopic type stuff, especially coming from Hancock, who makes these very Americana-centered movies. Like The Alamos, and as I said in my review, very much seems like something that you would, like a disinterested history professor or history teacher in high school would show his class to eat up a couple periods and them not necessarily take anything from it beyond some people were at the Alamo at one point and Billy Bob Thornton screamed at the camera as he was being killed as Davy Crockett. Brian, Shane, you did not watch this movie.
Oh, now you want to play host?
All right.
Call me out.
Yeah. Brian, what'd you think of The Founder?
Kind of interesting, but mostly kind of boring. I don't know. It's, I feel like a high school kid could have written it, I guess.
That all seems fair.
I think it probably, I don't know. It's just, if you took, or maybe like a freshman in college writing his first documentary, chooses McDonald's, just goes with it, and this is what you get. Yeah. I really didn't like Ray Kroc afterwards, but whatever.
How do you think the movie felt about Ray Kroc?
Well, he seemed like a real asshole to his family, and they didn't really seem to care about that. I don't know. I guess I think the movie put him at like a good guy. Not a great guy, but a good guy.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think in the movie's choices to withhold several things, like, for example, Ray Kroc, after he has finally won over the McDonald's brothers, played by Nick Offerman and John Carroll Lynch, it would have been nice to see the discussion of him. I want to bankrupt these people. I want to put the McDonald's right next to their forcibly rebrand McDonald's, or with his wife. I wanted to see the divorce proceedings, like really lean into what this guy did. But by leaving out these scenes of him at his absolute worst, the movie is putting its finger on the scale and saying, this guy's just ambitious, leave him alone. And look, he found a better wife who was as ambitious as he was, despite him being 60-something, mid-60s-year-old Michael Keaton and she being married to already successful Patrick Wilson, which makes no sense, whatever. That is true to history, apparently. Like, Ray Kroc did marry a woman a couple dozen years younger than he did after dissolving his first marriage, but I don't know. I just never bought that romance.
This felt like it was supposed to be like a big deal. Does this movie get all this press? And are we talking about today if it weren't for the fact that it's at the end of Keaton's like hot streak there?
Yeah, I don't think so. It really came and went. I think it was squarely pitched as like an Oscar type of movie.
Right.
But none of that worked. I don't think it worked even in like smaller critics groups or anything like that. It's just it's a very standard biopic. When you're Meryl Streep and you're in like a deeply subpar Margaret Thatcher biopic, maybe you can sell that. But Michael Keaton, even though he was, you know, and is in a period of like career renaissance, he's no Meryl Streep. Like he can't necessarily just sell this movie based purely on who he is. Everybody likes Michael Keaton. He's got limits. There's this idea in The Founder where you're supposed to do it for America, as in build this company for America, employ these people for America, in the sense of what's good for Ford Motors is good for, or what's good for General Motors is good for the country, that type of thinking from the mid-century, like corporate success will help us against the communists, so on and so forth, strengthen the country, blah, blah, blah. This movie could have potentially interrogated that idea, where the it in Do It for America is to make billions of dollars on underpaid labor and environmental stresses and diabetes and heart disease and so on and so forth. But I think the movie takes McDonald's to be like an unequivocal good compared to the teen infested diners of the 40s and 50s. Not that, I mean, when I was in high school, we would duck out from track practice and run to McDonald's and go hang out there. So, take that, Ray Kroc. Your dream was destroyed.
Yeah. We would hang out at Burger King.
Really?
Yeah, right across the street from Boys and Girls Club. It's a good spot.
Brian, did you miss or anticipate any kind of like criticism of McDonald's itself in this movie?
I'm sad you didn't ask me where I would hang out.
Brian, where was your hangout in high school? What fast food restaurant did you and your chums patronize?
The nearest fast food place was like 8 miles away. So sometimes we'd go to the gas station up the hill.
Nice.
I wanted to say something. They got into like the efficiency of fast food. This obsession with, you know, how quickly we can make a gazillion hamburgers at a time or whatever. It's just, I used to appreciate things like that, and at this point, I'm over it.
That efficiency might have been impressive when it was first being invented, like that specific business practice. I've worked in fast food restaurants. It's not a well choreographed ballet. It's assembly lines. There are just a person stationed here, a person stationed here, a person stationed here. That's pretty much it. I think, to the movie's great credit, it was able to impress upon me that this was actually something that took a lot of work to figure out. And I think a lot of that is based on Nick Offerman's performance, who is very good as one of the McDonald's brothers. He seems like a joyless person who does manage to take a lot of joy in figuring out this ballet of teenagers making burgers and putting pickles and squirting mustard, etc. But that just bears no resemblance to my experience in fast food. And I think the movie has such a high opinion of this invention, both on the McDonald's brothers' part and on Ray Kroc's part, who will eventually steal the name in place of his own to conquer the world. Not only does it have to be efficient and make a lot of money and so on and so forth, but the food also has to be great. Like, he remarks that it's the best hamburger he's ever had. The fake milkshake is delicious and indistinguishable from the real thing made with ice cream. I just find all that very hard to believe. I didn't buy it when he said it. I didn't buy it now. I mean, who would say that? Come on. It's not supposed to be great.
I don't know. It's pretty good.
I mean,
it's not like I don't go to McDonald's with my kids. I'm in a hurry.
Oh, yeah. What's your go-to order?
It's not. I usually only go and I get a bacon and egg biscuit with a round egg and white cheese, because then they have to actually make the egg and put the cheese on it instead of the folded egg with the yellow cheese.
From what I remember working at McDonald's when I was a freshman in high school, I think those eggs, the round eggs, are just defrosted. I don't think do they make them? Surely they don't.
No.
I hate to blow up your regular McDonald's order, Brian. Take that, steal that joy from you.
I don't know. At least I feel like it's an actual egg.
Okay, that's
fair.
I'm
not sure if the folded eggs are actually
egg. Like a single egg, as opposed to components of dozens upon dozens of eggs in the folded egg.
Some chicken.
Powder egg fold.
I mean, if the blender holds up, they do like powdered ingredients there.
Yeah. Right.
I spent that time working at McDonald's. I've been to a McDonald's, we'll say a dozen times in the intervening 20 years. Which I think should demonstrate how I hold that restaurant in esteem. It's like McDonald's and then it's Crystal's or / White Castle.
Okay.
Those places are in the same ballpark. It's not going to fuck. I would never choose a McDonald's.
I think I saw that like Crystal's is on like that chart, whereas Popeye's is chaotic good. Crystal's is chaotic bad.
Yeah, that'd be fine. I'd buy that.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Just wants to tear, just pure anarchy. Smothering people to death in gray meat.
Oh.
Gross.
Popeye's still great.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the best fast food, right?
The line is always so long. which I'm sure speaks to something, but who wants to spend 20 minutes in a drive-thru line?
I can tell you right now, whoever the founder of Popeyes was not worried about efficiency. That movie, Nick Offerman would just be playing, I don't know, someone's...
He would be sitting on the porch strumming a banjo or something,
just
the equivalent.
Just a white guy who fails up, and this is Popeyes.
I would like two chicken legs, please. Here's a biscuit and some fries.
Yes. You don't question it.
The Founder's not a very good movie.
Hey, I got it.
Yes.
According to some random Reader's Digest on MSN article, says the round egg is freshly cracked.
In the restaurant as you order it?
Or just at some
point? At some point, I'm sure they like crack it. Maybe they have them ready to go or whatever. But you can fry a round egg over hard in like a minute. They've got it. I got to figure it out there in the mornings. Don't worry.
Sounds like a good order to make.
I would strongly doubt there is an eggshell within 100 miles of any given McDonald's.
You need to go to McDonald's in the morning and ask, because I'm pretty sure I'm right.
I would just ask for an eggshell because I don't want to eat the food there. I'm just trying to prove a point.
you try this bacon and egg biscuit or McMuffin if you prefer the McMuffin with round egg and white cheese.
Sometimes I get the chicken biscuit, but not the southern style one. It's the McChicken chicken biscuit. It's so gross.
And you can hear the squawking in the background because McDonald's is making everything fresh, including their chicken meat.
I assume that you get the McChicken meat from the mutant chicken that is all mixed together egg. Like you plant it and it grows a chicken that's really fucked up, and that's the McChicken meat.
The one who can only get around by flapping its wings and pushing its breast along the ground of the coop because it's far too top heavy to actually move or stand.
100%.
Okay.
That's what happens if you spill like the whole McDonald's yolk stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't understand science.
To bring it back to the founder, I would have just liked to have seen a single negative thing about starting down this path of food consumption. But again, it's all do it for America. John Lee Hancock makes movies about America, where America is awesome and never wrong, and the Alamo was great, and isn't it awesome that this rich white lady took in this poor black kid, and The Rookie, that's another, my mom loves The Rookie. Anybody can be a pro baseball player into their 40s or however old that character was, that actor was, who remembers? I don't know. The guy's corny as shit. The Founder could have, I think, been a really strong anti-hero tale. It's not that. It's not that at all. Ray Kroc wins in the end.
I think like the McDonald's anti-hero movie and maybe some of the things they've done to the franchisees without diving too deep into American obesity, because I don't think you can blame McDonald's for that. I think in showing, you know, assuming Ray Kroc was a terrible person, showing all that off, that I think that'd make for a good movie.
I don't necessarily need him to be a terrible person, but that kind of invention and consolidation and just the amount of resources involved and the amount of public policy that flows out of it. The individual doesn't have to be, you know, terrible, but they can create something subpar for like the broader community. And that's what I would have appreciated, whether he realizes it or not. But I don't need the character to judge himself, but the movie to like have some kind of opinion beyond look at this titan of industry
just deeply boring to me. Are the new McDonald's around you all redesigning themselves to look gray and very utilitarian?
Yeah,
it's awful. I miss the Playscape or the Play Place or whatever.
Yeah, we got most. Give me some color. You still have those?
Oh.
I was sliding down a slide into a ball pit just yesterday. I don't eat at McDonald's, but I take advantage of the play place, certainly.
Yeah, I see that.
There are so many that I can never be asked to leave enough times.
Yeah, I mean, it was really embarrassing when we walked in and walked heavy. I had to walk right back out one time when I was with you. They knew. Your face is posted back there.
Yeah, I started moving directly for that play place. anytime you... No, too far. Never mind. Our last movie is the 80s classic Heathers, which I was shocked to learn. I was shocked to learn a lot of things about Heathers, but I was shocked to learn that this was also not a successful movie. Kind of 3 for 3 as far as financial hits. The founder made maybe half of it, or maybe twice its budget back, which is a success, but it's like a $10 million movie in the first place. Gruber was a failure by any definition, and Heathers, I think, made a measly $2 million, which was very surprising to me considering that this movie seems to have a pretty solid grasp on like high school movie culture. And I did see this for the first time. This is directed by Michael Lehman, who would go on to such cinematic success that he would cast George Mirasan opposite Billy Crystal in My Giant. That would be 7-7, I want to say, Czechoslovakian George Mirasan. Not necessarily anyone's idea of a strong actor. He doesn't have a good resume. The point is this director. Yeah, interesting choice.
Casted this movie a bit better than that.
Yes. Preconceived notions about Heathers. What did you guys... I don't know. Was this your first time seeing this movie first?
I didn't know it was a movie.
Had you heard that term before?
I had never heard the term. I didn't know anything about it. Just totally went in totally blind.
Okay.
I knew the term, so I assumed it was just going to be another 80s teen movie.
Yes.
That I wasn't really interested in.
Alpha girls being usurped from the top of the social hierarchy, which it kind of is, but it's also a movie where cool outsider Christian Slater is introduced very early on, shooting a couple of jocks in the face with blanks, which I feel like has killed many stuntmen.
And Bruce Lee's kid.
Yes, yeah. Bruce.
Can't think of his name.
Brandon. Was it a Brandon blank, or was it like someone put a real bullet into a gun accidentally?
It was a blank and something, like a... some object was in there, I believe.
Okay. A shocking moment in Heathers when a teenage boy pulls out a handgun in a cafeteria and shoots, albeit bullies, but shoots two teen bullies right in the face. I think that was the moment when I realized that I had to have my expectations somewhat flipped over. This is not the movie I thought it was. This is some kind of dystopian satire, another spoof, somewhat in the vein of MacGruber. The 80s being the 80s, I mean, the impression, and I don't have a good track record or a lot of experience with these. I haven't seen any of those John Hughes movies, with the exception of Ferris Bueller, which I did not like. So maybe I don't get these kind of 80s teen movies in general, but this does somewhat seem in direct conversation with movies like The Breakfast Club and 16 Candles and movies like that, except I don't know exactly what the conversation sounds like. There aren't really a lot of human reactions, human emotions in Heathers.
I want to say this movie gets half made now and then half not made. Like, the dark comedy side really plays well, making fun of misogynistic movies and themes. Really plays great, but it's just that we're sadly in a point where we can't joke about murdering a bunch of kids at school anymore.
The founder was essentially 100% on Ray Kroc's side. I think Heathers is maybe like 45% on Christian Slater's side, who, if he got his way, would have blown up the entire school. Do you guys agree with that? Brian, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know how he ever got back into the school after shooting those two kids in the face, but like this movie, very right. one of the good things about this movie is that they quickly have the head in the grass when they're playing croquet, so you just let down your guard of any realism very quickly, which was good, and they just go full dark the whole way. I appreciated that. I don't know who they were cheering for. I thought they were just, they made fun of the teachers, the girls, everyone.
The parents just, are utterly useless.
Yeah, they were just all on the cops were useless. Everybody was useless. I appreciated it. It's good.
It's kind of surprising that it didn't just go all the way and have the school actually blow up if it hated everyone so much.
Yeah,
that's... I don't know. But it was a comedy. That's what separates it from...
Brian, go ahead.
Sorry. No, I want to hear Shane's original script.
The original script actually had them being all blown up and then prom is in heaven. And the studio's like, too dark.
It's too dark. Come on.
After the rest of that movie.
Winona Ryder fakes her suicide and her mom walks in on her presumably dead. Yeah. And that is too dark. Like, come on.
Yes.
You've committed at that point.
Yes.
I think that would have been a better movie.
It is a better movie. That makes this an A minus A.
Winona Ryder is a murderer
right.
in this movie. And she, I think, and this was a very early role for her, if not her first role. And I think if not for her, this would essentially be unwatchable. Like, you can kind of buy that because she's Winona Ryder. All right, fine. I guess I want this murderer to get away with it.
Right. Yeah. Well, the two murders, I was actually thinking about this earlier. Like, are those are murder. Those are probably murder two, not murder one. Especially the when she's lied to about the bullets. I mean, that might be manslaughter.
She knows. Like, isn't she? I believe she's over one of the dead jocks, realizing that he is in fact dead.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be in her mind at this point, but
sure.
I feel like she got pretty good.
She would probably flip on Christian Slater, anyways. Yeah,
I think so.
Okay,
I think so. The first one is just, I mean, I don't even know what she was doing. She had no intention to give her the poison, right?
Yes. Yes, that is true. Of course, she had nothing to say when she knew what Slater was doing.
Yeah.
This movie is very strange. The morality and, like, the rooting interest of this movie, it's bonkers. It's absolutely bonkers. Like, forget being able to make this movie today, which, which, as you said, I think is impossible. There was a TV series adaptation of this. I don't have any idea how that worked.
There's a pretty famous musical, I think, too.
I just finished watching Euphoria on HBO, and that is a bleak, the worst things that you think of teenagers doing, they're doing kind of show, like, essentially to scare Gen X parents. And there isn't, like, a whiff of school shooter type of stuff in that. And just the idea that you could have a reasonably sympathetic school shooter type in a movie. He was even wearing a trench coat on pure accident, but it's there.
Yeah.
That is just absolutely mind-blowing. Like, you can show a parade of dicks in Euphoria, but you can't get anywhere near that kind of stuff. Like, Glee, I think, did a school shooter episode, but it was a misunderstanding. And it was maudlin as shit, in my understanding. I've never watched an episode of Glee.
Yeah,
I can't really think of anything else. Yeah, difficult to get through.
I'd rather watch a movie about a school shooter.
There have been several movies about school shooters, not on their side.
Yeah, I'd rather watch a movie about the movie on the school shooter's side than watch another episode of Glee.
By making everyone absolutely terrible, the movie isn't making a pitch that maybe the school shooter is right, which is present here. That's crazy. That's just crazy. This movie, again, very strange. I mentioned...
I don't think the movie was ever really on his side. When you think about it, like, I felt like I was very clearly rooting for Winona Ryder to stop him. I think they towed the line pretty good. I think they towed the line on killing all those people. Like, they were kind of on his side. I don't think they were on his side to just lay out all of the whole high school.
Do you think he was the smartest person in the movie?
No, I don't know who the smartest. I never even thought of that.
Yeah, he had to be.
I kind of think he was.
Yeah.
And Winona Ryder is just saying you can't do this because you can't murder all these people. That's essentially her only reason. Which, I mean, she's right, obviously. But...
John, Jiminy Christmas.
But she's not outthinking Christian Slater. Like, he's the one who's thought everything out, and he's got the fake suicide note. He's got the bombs ready to go.
So bizarre. This movie's so weird.
Very strange. Why does he disarm that bomb? Did he just happen to stick his knife in it? And we did just watch MacGruber. MacGruber, I feel like, would have tried anything to disarm a bomb. He didn't try sticking a knife into it. I don't know if that would work necessarily.
Yeah, I feel like he did it because he actually said he loved her.
isn't... I don't know. We're asking too much of this movie. I mentioned World's Greatest Dad a lot in my review. This movie has a lot in common with World's Greatest Dad. I wouldn't be surprised if it was somewhat inspired by World's Greatest... or if World's Greatest Dad was not in some way inspired by Heathers. But World's Greatest Dad is dark, which is fine. It's not cruel. I think it does like a lot of its characters, especially Robin Williams and like the dead kid's friend and World's Greatest Dad. There are people to root for in that movie. I don't think Heathers likes anyone. I think it's just cruel. Yeah. We're going back to the idea that a mother could walk in on her daughter hanging from the ceiling and it'd be a joke. And the joke pays off when she opens her eyes. Ha ha, mom, I got you. It's not a fucking joke.
Weird.
That is...
Weird. It was dark. It was supposed to be dark. Yeah. I didn't think... I appreciated that.
That was too much. That was fucking too much.
But also, you're kind of like, mom deserves it.
I thought it was a very conflicting movie. That was the whole point. I like that. The more you try to knock this movie down, I think the more I like it.
Who picked this movie?
I don't remember. Cook, maybe? I'm glad he picked it, just because this I do think this is like a culturally relevant movie, 30 years after its release. But I was not a fan. I gave this a C.
I'm at a B plus.
It's just so hard. It's just really hard to wash current sentiments out of your brain when you're watching a movie from before those sentiments existed. I think if this movie had any like female creative influence in it, it could have potentially been better. But Lehman as director and the dude writer, we just watch Big Mouth. We watch Big Mouth, all of us. We like Big Mouth. There's a head push in this movie, and we're not on red ribbon Heather's side during that.
Right.
And a scene I mentioned again in my review is when Veronica, Winona Ryder's character, goes out on a date with the two jocks, with a double date with the two jocks, and Yellow Heather is hooking up with one of the jocks in the background, and he's like pinning her arms to the ground and like writhing around on top of her. And it's a joke. It's a joke.
I thought it was more of a
Why
statement.
Is it a joke?
Because
I don't know why you think that it's a joke. It happens. They didn't make a joke out of it.
Well, no, I mean...
I disagree. I think the movie is like supposed to be like, look at these two sloppy teens.
Oh, no, I didn't see that at all. I thought it was a playoff of typical 80s movies, typical 70s, 80s teen movies, where that was it, as guys were doing that. Like, the amounts of date rape and straight-up rape in those movies and sexual assault was...
disconcerting.
So I thought they were making a statement on that, like everyone just casually is going to watch this and walk away.
Yeah, and now that guy's dead, and that's what made the movie good. They straight up killed that guy for what he did.
That's not why they killed him.
Well, whatever, they killed him for being him, pretty much, and all of his things, I felt like, was culminated into the one rumor about that girl.
Veronica kills him because they're talking shit about her, not because of anything they did to Yellow Ribbon Heather.
Right. I don't think it was because I felt like those two were killed because of who they were, not the one thing. Like, they were building that up to make it okay. And then you're sort of like morally indecisive when those guys are dead.
I appreciate that you read a lot into this movie, like some subtext. I based on my giant, I don't know that these guys have subtext in them necessarily. Like they just struck lucky, I think, with this script.
I think it's this guy's first script. He's in some other movies though, right? The writer.
Hudson Hawk. They re-teamed up for Hudson Hawk with Bruce Willis, which is widely regarded as one of the worst movies ever made.
Oh, well. The guy was literally working at a video store, and they wrote this, and then they changed it.
And now he's wondering, why wasn't I Tarantino? I hate to sound stodgy and PC and whatever, but I just could not get on this movie's wavelength in any way, shape, or form. I appreciated Winona Ryder I think she just finally broke out thanks to this movie. Christian Slater to a lesser degree. Or maybe to an equal degree. I don't know exactly. I mean, he would go on to do like True Romance, and I think he flamed out with drugs and
Broken Arrow.
Sure, Broken Arrow. And she would eventually break out with her, like, run into trouble with shoplifting and whatever. Whatever. Heathers is cursed. I don't know. Did anybody, any other actors? Shannon Doherty? I recognize her.
I looked him up. Stuff. I looked some, like, the main Heather up on IMDb. She didn't do anything.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, she, the first Heather gets killed.
Yes, Redbow Heather.
Yeah, she died of cancer and like at the age of 32.
Did she really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, so hence the skinny IMDb page.
The only other guy I recognize from this is the preacher, the minister, because he's in Beetlejuice and it was a bit of a character.
Oh yeah, yeah, like yeah, I recognize that guy and, from all kinds of stuff.
He died after being confined to a wheelchair after okay. he fell on his head. So,
Heathers
cursed.
Look what you did.
Cursed.
Yeah, a ballsy movie that deserves some credit for how aggressive it is. But
I need to talk to people too who saw this in the '80s.
Yeah, and I would like. I'm sure there's been a lot of retrospective writing.
Yeah.
About Heathers. I would like to read some of that too.
If the musicals come through town, I think I'd watch it based on this.
Yep, I'm with Shane. It's a date.
All right. I'll keep an eye out in the paper. That'll do us. For this episode of the Munich Movie Club podcast, our next trio will be more exciting than this trio. We're going to be watching, speaking of Tarantino, his latest, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and The Breadwinner from the animation directors behind The Secret of Kells, which you watched many years ago. And we're also going to be talking about First Man, recently added to HBO, one of my favorite movies from 2018, one of the best of the decade, from the director of Whiplash and La La Land. So, potentially three A-level movies. I don't know. I need to watch Once Upon a Time in Hollywood again, I think, to really crystallize my opinion about it. But that'll be coming up shortly. Check us out at MunichMovie.club to read these reviews and others. I just posted a review of Vice from the end of last year, the Dick Cheney biopic. Not a fan of that movie. And I'll be posting a review of Aquaman here shortly, which was a movie I liked more than an Oscar Beatty, Adam McKay biopic. So there you go. And that's not a very good movie either. So here nor there. Brian, did you see Vice?
No.
I'd be curious what you think of it.
I like watching political stuff, but I don't know. Maybe next time I'm on the bike, I'll watch it.
That's fair. I think it's on Hulu.
I saw it. It's in my queue somewhere. I'm just over politics right now.
That's fair. I don't know why that would be. Check us out on Facebook at Munich Movie Club. Follow us on Twitter at Munich Movie Club. And that's it. Thank you for joining me tonight, guys.
Thanks for hosting, John.
That's what I do. I host.
See ya. <John. laughs>